from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, new research on television and its effect on toddlers, infants, small children, and adolescents once again points to concerns about the so-called boob tube and its deleterious effects and limited educational benefits. Our young live in a world of screens and crass entertainment and commercials aimed at getting them to get their parents to buy often unhealthy or non-nutritious food. In the hour ahead, we'll take up the topic of kids and what they should watch, how much television, as well as how much use of iPads, smartphones, digital video players, and the many technologies that have become so much a part of our world and the world of children. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. For the past 15 years, the American Academy of Pediatrics has expressed concern over the time children and adolescents spend watching television, and the average child watches 20 to 30 hours a week. The Academy also warned parents to limit TV time as well as time on computers and time with self-described educational games for infants and toddlers, arguing that video screen time in general has no educational benefit for them. And in this Forum Hour, we turn our attention to television and other screen entertainment and the overall effect on our nation's children and our nation's youth. Joining us in studio is James Steyer, CEO and founder of Common Sense Media. They're a San Francisco-based nonprofit which conducted the survey on media habits for kids 0 to 8 years old. Common Sense is well known to us. We have had Jim Steyer on before, and glad to have you here. Welcome.
Great to be here, Michael.
We also have Dr. Ari Brown with us this morning. She's in Austin, Texas. She's a pediatrician and was lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics Policy on Television and Kids Under 2 Years Old. And welcome, Dr. Brown.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. And also, we're going to be talking with some other people in the course of the hour, but let's talk with you first, Ari Brown. And let's just find out, if we may, from you, sort of in a broad way, about what this new study says about limiting children, particularly infants' time in front of the TV set.
Well, it's a policy statement that's a reflection of the science that we've seen come out since our previous policy statement in 1999. And specifically, we're only addressing children under the age of 2 and it's video programs, so passive forms of programs, not any interactive things like apps and games that you would see on other types of screens. And so what we found is that kids under age 2 developmentally just don't get it. They don't understand the content and the context of video content. And so that's why it's not educational. And we want parents to be informed about that because it can be very misleading out in the marketplace. The other issue is that there is some concern for risk of harm, both with developmental effects and health effects. The two big developmental issues we have concerns about are delayed language skills in young children who are watching these programs, and also that they could be time better spent in unstructured, unplugged play, because we know that that is very valuable time for critical skills like problem solving and using your brain creatively. The health risk we have an issue with is children who are being parents who are using TV as a sleep aid and having these babies going to bed with the TV on, and a third of parents in surveys have shown that they will have a TV in a child's bedroom under the age of 3, and a third of them also admit to using this as a sleep aid, and it actually causes disrupted sleep and delayed sleep, so these kids losing quality and quantity of sleep.
You mentioned the 1999 recommendations. Those were far more severe in many ways. You were talking about an outright ban of screens for children under 2, weren't you, back then?
Well, you know, that's the way the media played it. And if you actually look at the policy statement, what we said for this age group is that we discourage TV in this age group because we see no benefit and we have concern for harm. And we did take a precautionary principle because that was based on limited scientific data. Now we actually have a lot more data to say, yeah, you know what, it's not educational and there really is a concern for harm here based on the science. So our recommendations have actually just been reaffirmed, but I think we're trying to present it in a way that's very reality-based. We know that you can't keep screens away from your child 100% of the time. We know you can't sit down with your child 24 hours a day and play with them. But what we're suggesting is that you thoughtfully consider media use for your entire family and make a media management plan. And know that when your child needs to be doing something while you're cooking dinner or taking a shower, that if you leave your child with some raw materials, whether it be building blocks or even just some Tupperware and a wooden spoon, your child will come up with some real industrious uses for these things, and they're actually getting great value of that time, better time spent than your child being entertained by a program.
Again, Dr. Ari Brown is pediatrician and lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics Policy on Television and Kids Under 2 Years Old. Jim Steyer here with us in studio is CEO and founder of Common Sense Media. And Jim, when we're talking sort of older age, getting up to the age 8 and everything, it's pretty astonishing how many kids have televisions in their own bedroom. I mean, your study has pretty much proven that we're up to very high numbers there.
Right, almost 50%. I mean, that's nuts. That's nuts. And I would say that that Dr. Brown and the Academy of Pediatrics are correct about really limiting screen time in general, particularly the 0 to 2 age range, but in general. But the idea of putting a TV set or a video game machine in your kid's bedroom is just crazy. And, you know, we here in the Bay Area and across the country know the old real estate maxim, location, location, location. But that's so true about media. And as your kids get older, the real other thing our study showed is that it's going mobile now. That kids at 7 or 8, for example, who are at the upper end of the research that we did, now are being handed, actually as young as 4 and 5, their parents' iPhone, their parents' smartphone, which has apps, as Dr. Brown mentioned. And so this is a big trend. And as kids get older now, we know that kids, particularly even older than this age, sleep with their phones. It's really amazing. So media is 24/7 now, particularly with these digital devices. And the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendation about limiting screen time is critical, not just 0 to 2, but in general.
You mentioned the apps, and there's a really kind of an app divide, as you've discovered, too, in terms of classes and wealth, and families with more money obviously have more apps for their kids.
That's right.
More mobile devices. But televisions are still the big problem. I mean, in the sense that, let's talk about health and education problems with kids who are just watching TV all the time, or TV's in their room and they're watching a great deal of the time.
There's no question. I mean, there's studies now that show that if you spend that much time in front of a TV set, the kids are going to do less well in school. It's now demonstrable evidence. Dr. Brown talked about some of the other health issues that are involved.
Obesity,
no question. You know, I have a colleague at Stanford, Dr. Tom Robinson, who talks about how if you plunk your kid in front of the TV, it's the number one way to encourage obesity. And if you remove the TV, it's the number one way to prevent obesity. So there's no question. TV is still the elephant in the room when it comes to kids and media at this age.
And what is the recommendation? We heard Dr. Brown talking about some recommendations that have come there. I mean, one of your recommendations is see your pediatrician more often.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And Dr. Brown and I, this week, since the study came out and since their recommendation came out, have talked a couple of times. And the thing is, they're absolutely right. And we need the pediatricians of the country to get out there and educate parents about this. But our study showed that only 14% of the families that we surveyed, and this is a very large sample, had actually spoken with their pediatrician about these issues. So the role of the Academy of Pediatrics and pediatricians in general is really valuable, because we need to teach parents in this age range, 0 to 8, parents are still in charge. You know, with a teenager, the teenager is largely in charge, as we all know, Michael. But 0 to 8, the parents are still in charge. So the pediatrician statement is really important, but it's also important that the membership of the American Academy of Pediatrics understands this and then makes it part of your regular annual checkup. The same thing with schools. I mean, we at Common Sense now are in about 20,000 schools in the United States with a digital literacy curriculum. And a big focus of that is teaching not just the kids, but the parents about how to manage media properly.
Well, Dr. Ari Brown, do we know anything about long-term effects on attention span and social skills when it comes to too much screen time for kids at this point?
Well, that's a good question. We definitely have looked at attention issues. There have been some studies that have seen some changes in a child's attention level when they've been watching certain programs, and also the amount of time that they're watching. But it's the chicken or the egg, because truthfully, some children who have ADHD, have that diagnosis, they're attracted to screens. So we don't know if it's the screens that are causing the problem, or if parents are parking their kids in front of the TV because they find it very kind of soothing or comforting to be in front of that screen. So the data is conflicting there, although certainly something that's going to continue to be explored. But you bring up an interesting point, is where's the long-term data? And we simply don't have it, particularly in this very young age group that we were looking at recently. But there is a study that's been funded by the National Institute of Health, the Child Development and Human Development section. It's called the National Children's Study, that's just starting now, and it's going to look at children over the next 18 years and what effect certain environmental things have on them, media being one of them. So, you know, ask me 20 years from now and I'm going to have an answer for you. And I'm really glad that they're looking at this issue, because we do know that in this digital world today, and these kids are, they're digital natives, you know, they're born and raised in screens. We want to know what kind of impact it has on them.
Well, I was reading your report, and I was seeing things come up like violent or aggressive behavior and increased sexual activity and worse school performance, not to mention obesity.
Right, and those are issues for older kids, and we do have concerns about those things, and we know that there is an association there. The question is, what is the association? You know, for instance, the obesity, is it the number of hours they're sitting in front of the TV? Is it the fact that they're watching advertising for junk food? Or is it the fact that they're sitting there with a bag of potato chips while they're watching the TV? We don't really know what the link is. We just know that there does seem to be a link.
Well, we also know, Jim Steyer, that many of those commercials are, about 34%, I read, are telling kids to go out and buy sugar cereals and things of that sort.
No question. And, you know, it's interesting listening to Dr. Brown. And at Common Sense, we took over this research. This is the launch of the new research program. And as you may know, the Kaiser Family Foundation here in the Bay Area did wonderful research in this area for more than a decade. And now Common Sense is developing this research program because, as Dr. Brown and others have made clear, we need the research. But I always sit here and laugh because I'm a parent of four kids and, you know, I work in this field for a long time. Look, the basic message to our audience out there, Michael, is very simple. The media and technology that your kids are consuming and creating with and playing with today are having an unbelievable impact on their life, whether it's obesity, whether it's occasionally aggressive or violent behavior, whether it's sleep disorders.
Maybe even neural pathways.
No question. So you must make this part of your parenting. And schools today, that's the other thing I think you're seeing here in the app gap that you referred to earlier, where wealthy kids have parents who now download apps on their iPads or their iPhones or other smartphones. But low-income kids, only 14% of them are in families where they're actually using applications. So what you're seeing is digital media in particular, which of course is all being built within a 40-mile radius of this studio, and in some cases within a mile radius of this studio, Michael, is changing the nature of learning, of human communication, of brain development, and we ignore it at our peril. And that's why this data is so important. And not being a scientist myself, it's easier for me to say, hey, we know this impacts your kid. You as a parent have got to be involved. You as an educator have got to know this stuff, because there are great opportunities and possibilities with media, just as there are big health concerns that Dr. Brown and others
put. What is your group recommending? No TV, or cut out the screens, or more parental involvement?
All of the above. Parental engagement. Here's the deal. You know, you're there. I've got four kids, Michael. Everybody at some point or another uses some device, a TV or even a phone now, as a babysitter. You watch parents driving around here in San Francisco across the Bay Area. You can see them give their iPhone or smartphone into the back seat to the kid to keep them quiet. So,
or have a TV in the car.
Or have a TV. The big thing is they advertise TVs in the car. So I think you have to be realistic. Moderation and balance are key. I think in many things in life, and this goes to brain development issues, obesity, et cetera, but moderation is key. But there are clear limits. I mean, our number one rule is, you know, set a healthy media diet and set limits for your kid. Choose wisely. And then at this age in particular, 0 to 8, you've got to experience media with your kids. Just like they should be listening now to your program, Michael, you should listen with your kids.
They should be in school, actually.
Well, yeah. They should be in school, but you should experience media with your kids, and that's really important when they're on digital devices and using apps. Because we didn't grow up with those, as Dr. Brown said. We're not digital natives, but you've got to do that with your kids if you're going to be the kind of engaged and involved parent that we all want to be in the 21st century.
Again, James Tyer is CEO and founder of San Francisco-based Common Sense Media. We're going to go down to Los Angeles now and talk to Jessica Gottlieb. She is parenting blogger based in L.A. and has been somewhat in a contrarian position. Would that be an appropriate way to characterize you, Jessica Gottlieb?
I think that's fair. I mean, what I'm hearing here sounds mostly reasonable, but I think that the expectation that the first 2 years of a child's life have to be spent with the parents educating them every single second that we're and interacting and making this eye contact, it's like, I really think it's also fair to remember that parents get to just relax and that we can walk into the pediatrician's office without having to defend the way we spend our days. And it sets a really tough tone for us, especially as new mothers, to walk into the pediatrician's office and to hear, don't do this, don't do that, instead of like, hey, we're going to assume that you've got some common sense and that you didn't, you know, leave your nine-month-old watching TV for 8 hours, which a nine-month-old won't do anyhow. Which is,
don't quite have that attention span, do they?
They really don't. And the studies that talk about these kids watching hours and hours of TV, I think are disingenuous, because I've never seen a one-year-old that could watch TV for 2 hours. I've had 2 one-year-olds, and I've had their friends around, and so I'm curious how they come up with these numbers. I know that the studies in the 90s had kids watching for anywhere from a minute to 8 minutes, and they multiplied by a certain number to try and figure out what might happen if they watch TV for an hour. So I worry that parents are just being set up for failure over and over again. And, you know, I think we can give new parents a little more credit than this.
Well, I read your blog, and essentially you say parents are better parents when they're happier. And if it's relaxation for, say, a mother to watch Ellen DeGeneres in the afternoon or something like that, or maybe to get a little time off with the kid watching something that comes out of the PBS workshop, and we're going to talk with somebody actually from Children's Media here as well, that this is a relief. This is something that's good. That's how I read you. Yeah.
Yeah, I see no problem with it. And the other thing is that I wonder about, you know, I know parents are self-reporting for, you know, the studies regarding the first year and stuff. I nursed both of my children, and that meant just like parking myself on the sofa for half an hour, and quite often the TV was on. So maybe that's considered some of this media time. I get nervous when we do all or nothing for new parents, because I think that those are really tender years for the parents as well as for the kids.
Could I go back to you, Dr. Brown, Ari Brown, especially the comment about infants under two not really spending as much time as has been suggested perhaps by your study, because they just don't have the attention span.
Right. Okay. Let me point this out, because I'm going to take a different position. I've heard a lot of mommy bloggers who are just completely annoyed with the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendation, and I'm going to say a couple things. One is, read the policy statement, okay? We're trying to be very realistic, reality-based. I actually had a quote from the New York Times that people are laughing at, that pediatricians were told, you know, what planet do you live on, right? This is reality. We have a digital world, and we're really trying to say, look, you know what? I'm a pediatrician. I'm a parent, too. I have 2 kids, and I know what it's like, and we're not telling you no TV. We're saying, you know what? Don't fool yourself into believing that this is an educational program, because it's not. It's entertaining, yes. It's not educational. So don't make yourself feel better about it because you think it's educational. Now, if you want to take the perspective of, heck, I just want to cook dinner, really, can I just have 30 minutes so I can pop in this show so my kid can be quiet so I can get something done? Okay? Well, you may take that approach, and that may be the way you approach your family's media diet. And you cut it at 30 minutes. There are people who don't do that, okay? There are people who park their kids in front of the TV longer than that. There are families who have the TV on all the time or almost all the time as background noise when no one is even watching it. And it is distracting for both the parent and the child. Okay? We don't need you to sit down with your child 24 hours a day and play with them. We don't expect you to. Okay? But what we want you to know that when you do have to do something else, it's really okay to let your child have some unstructured play. What did we do with a ball of string or a cardboard box? We figured it out. Okay? And in this world of this achievement culture where people are trying to do the right thing for their kids, well, the best thing you can do is let them play by themselves. That's really what we're trying to say. But I do get very upset because I think parents feel like they have to defend themselves, like they're being told that they're bad parents. We're not telling you you're bad parents. We're just trying to inform you so you can make good decisions.
Well, you don't want to make guilty parents. I understand that. But at the same time, I think we heard that Jessica Gottlieb says that it puts kind of pressure on parents. I'm wondering, Jim Steyer, just how much this gets back to the fact of parents being monitoring of what kind of content. I mean, certainly when Dr. Brown mentions distraction, cartoons are much more distractible, or fast-paced cartoons, let's say, and there are 20,000 commercials that a kid is exposed to average in a year. So one would think that maybe there should be some monitoring and discretion about what the kids are watching.
Well, totally. I mean, content and quantity of time matter. You know, that's why we started Common Sense Media. And now, 8 years later, we're in 100 million homes, and we have, you know, tens of million users in a month. So there's a reason why we try to give information about the content, because you're absolutely right, it does matter. And I think everybody's here is going to be reasonable. By the way, the one thing I do want to say to Jessica, however, is the research is incredibly methodologically correct. And I'm the father of four. And we've raised children just like Dr. Brown has. And we all know how tough it is to be a parent today. And we agree with you about that. But don't question the research. And don't, because we spend, I want to be very clear. We spend a ton of money and time doing absolutely impeccable research. And so do other scientists. That's why Dr. Brown's clarified her comments so carefully, if you heard the language that she used about cause and effect, etc. So the research is absolutely accurate. And just because you and I and Dr. Brown are moderate, reasonable users of media, and yes, we're not blaming parents at all, but the research is clear that there are large numbers of people. They may not live in your neighborhood, but they do plunk their kids in a room 5 hours a day, even under the age of two, where TV or other media is on, and that's not a healthy thing.
Well, Jessica Gottlieb, you're not really challenging the research here, are you?
No, I could not agree. No, I'm not challenging this group of research. I would say that the research from the 90s was it's very misleading and inaccurate, and has been called into question. But I just question how anybody could say that, a 6-month-old or a 9-month-old is really watching the TV. And I understand. I have actually, we have a neighbor that has the TV on in their house all the time. I shake when I have to walk into their house. So I get that. And I understand that parents should be cautioned against this. But I also, like, when I see, and I'm looking at the AAP recommendations, and it talks about putting putting your kid there with a wooden spoon and everything, how is a mom supposed to take a shower with a kid with a wooden spoon? Like, I understand, you know, unstructured play being really, really important. And I'm not saying that TV is even a more important tool, but I just don't see it as the boogeyman that it's presented to be.
And maybe, Ari Brown, I know we're only going to have you right to the break here, so final word from you on this, and also just the whole sense that we have that a lot of times parents are watching television themselves, and they're not necessarily watching things that are appropriate, and the kids are there in the room.
Right. Okay, so a couple of quick comments. One is that you may not think that your child is watching, that they briefly look up and they're not really engaged in the show. There's actually a great study recently done in 2010 that looked at the number of times a child looked up at a screen when a video program was on, when they were sitting there playing with their toys. They looked up 3 times every minute. And then they went on to the next toy more quickly. So they're less focused and they're distracted. You know, there's some real value at learning how to entertain yourself. And if you can't pay attention to your child because you're taking a shower, they will figure it out.
Well, there's the important message from the American Academy of Pediatrics. And thank you so much, Dr. Brown, for being with us. Ari Brown, again, pediatrician.
Thank you.
Lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics Policy on Television and Kids Under 2. You can join this discussion. We invite you to do that. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. Again, toll-free, Join us now, if you please, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or go to our Facebook page. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're focusing this hour on the effect of television and screen devices, and there are many of them out there, on children. According to a new survey, nearly half children the age of 2 and younger watch an average of 2 hours of television per day. And the American Academy of Pediatrics has issued a policy saying parents should keep children under 2 screen-free as much as possible. And they cite research that shows harmful effects on early development. So the real questions here are, how should parents tackle the challenge of limiting media exposure for infants, toddlers, for young children in this digital age? Video screens are really everywhere in so many forms. We had Dr. Ari Brown with us, who's a pediatrician and the lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics Policy on Television and Kids Under 2 Years Old. And with us here in studio is James Steyer, CEO and founder of Common Sense Media. They're based here in San Francisco. They're a nonprofit. They conducted a survey on media habits for children from 0 to 8. Funny to say children from 0, you know, children from birth to 8 years old. Jessica Gottlieb is with us. She's a parenting blogger, part of the parenting blogger network based in Los Angeles. And we thought we'd bring Leslie Rotenberg into the discussion, Senior Vice President for Children's Media at PBS. And we welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Thank you.
Let me just ask you for kind of a broad sense of PBS and how they develop educational children's media, especially for kids. Do you have in mind kids under 2, or is it mainly kids 2+?
Yeah, we absolutely do not have kids under 2 in mind when we develop educational media. For children, our starting age is 2, and we go up to about 8 or 9. And we're really about using the power of media. It can be incredibly influential, as your other guests have said, and incredibly powerful. And we're about using the power of media for good. I know in a lot of these conversations, the media is the boogeyman, and it's all bad. And you know, I think it's really important that we alert parents to the power of media, the influence of media, and to how many hours their kids are using it, and send them the message that there should be limits. But I think it's also important not to paint the device as the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about the content, as Jim said earlier. And at PBS, we develop educational children's media that helps children, that teaches them, that uses that power of media to teach them really important skills that they need to be successful in school and in life. We have great studies, independent third-party studies that show that some of this media, whether it's television or computer, web games that are interactive, or some of the new apps, can teach children crucial literacy skills, can increase their vocabulary, can teach them early math skills, early science skills, and can help them with messages that are also social, emotional, and are helping them to be successful when they're in the school environment.
I'm certainly aware, as most of our listeners are, that after all, we are a public radio and television station. Much of the good work done, educational work that's done by PBS, and also with many of the apps that are out there and things that come across on video screens. But you have to entertain kids, too. And I remember there was a major controversy, and I think it's still probably raging about, well, for example, Sesame Street, which has great educational content, but it goes so quickly and it's so fast that it certainly in some instances was thought to be maybe harmful to development, or made kids think that they had to sort of tamp down their attention spans because things move so quickly.
I'm not aware of any study that is reputable that shows Sesame Street as being harmful to children in any way. On the contrary, all the studies that we have seen, again, done by third parties, independent parties, demonstrate that Sesame Street is paced appropriately, age appropriately, for the children that they're trying to reach, who are roughly 2 to 5.
I don't mean to single out Sesame Street. I used to watch it with my kids and loved it. But I'm talking about kind of the fast-paced need to have entertainment and how that affects, comes across sometimes really as an innumerable shower of atoms, to quote Virginia Woolf.
Well, you won't find that on PBS. You won't find that on KQED locally. What you will find is content that is produced specifically for children who are 2 to 8 and paced appropriately, so that we know that they're able to learn and follow what's on the screen, follow the storyline, learn the lessons. So that's what you'll find on PBS.
Jim, Michael, sorry, you went in here. Yeah.
I do. We're a huge fan of Leslie and what she does at PBSKids.org and of Sesame Street. She's absolutely right. Look, so much media. Media is not the boogeyman. And that should, for any listener out there, that's not what we're saying. I don't think that was what Ari Brown was saying either, by the way. She was really focusing on 0 to 2 and limiting screen time. But we at Common Sense.
I don't think anybody's saying that, including our blogger here.
No. We're all right about that. There's enormous educational potential. That's what makes the new digital platform so interesting is the apps and the educational potential. All the stuff that Leslie and her colleagues do at PBSKids.org is amazing. Sesame Street, I completely agree with Leslie's assessment of it. That said, one of the funny challenges, but you know this as a parent, is the problem can be you have a 5-year-old who's watching something that was really designed for a 15-year-old. So they're with their older sibling and they're watching a fast-cut MTV. Yes, there's data that shows that some of the real fast-cutting stuff affects attention span, affects ADHD issues, et cetera. Video games, too. There's also data around video games related to ADHD.
Isn't there also some data that suggests that too much time in front of the screen, even educational TV and video stuff can make kids more passive?
Sure. But Leslie, who is one of the great creators and oversees one of the great platforms that exists in the field of kids and educational media, would also agree you can't do it for 5 or 6 hours a day. So it's all about balance, but it's also choosing the right content, as you said earlier, Michael. This isn't rocket science. I mean, we built this huge consumer reports guide at Common Sense so that you could find the good stuff and go find the stuff that's good for your kids.
If you give out your website, there are people probably aching to hear it.
CommonSense.org. Okay. I hope they know it by now. But the thing is, it's all about balance and moderation. Jessica, our blogger, is correct about that as well. Parents need a break. Media can be incredibly good, particularly if you're using this stuff at PBS.org, but even other stuff. But you just have to make good common sense choices.
Well, we're going to make some choices for callers now, and we'll go to them. Zami is our first caller. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, sir. Thanks for taking my call. I just would like to share that I'm a father of two. My oldest son now is in the fourth grade. And when he was growing up, he was looking after by the, me and my wife were busy working, and then the grown-up the grandma. And the grandma realized that later on was that, keep the kids in front of the TV when she's doing the chores and things like that. When he was 8 months to 1 year, and when I called his name, he would be looking at me and then response. And as the time goes on and watching TV all the time, and about two and a half years when I called him, he won't respond. No way with what his name is anymore. And now he has a learning disability, ADD. And I just came back from the his school meeting with his IEP annual view. So I just would like to share this, and that TV is, in my opinion, is really affecting the.
Well, we thank you for sharing that. In fact, I'm looking, Jim Sayer, and I know you're up on this research at an email here that asks about available research showing screen time linked to ADHD.
There's a doctor, for the audience, Dr. Dimitri Christakis at the University of Washington has a whole center on children and media up there, is a brilliant researcher in this field. So you can, if people want to go to commonsense.org, we have all of that on the website, but also we can link you to the best researchers in the field. Dr. Brown mentioned that. She referred to some of Dr. Christakis' studies. So there's clear links on ADHD. One thing she said, it's a chicken the egg question, if you recall her comment earlier, which is that sometimes you're already susceptible to attention deficit disorders before you're exposed to the media, and they're sort of mutually reinforcing. The same is true on video games. You know, Michael, we were talking about video games earlier. Video games, particularly if you have boys, two of our four children are boys, you really have to be aware of that platform. Again, there can be amazingly good educational content, so you should go out there and find that good stuff. But on the flip side, there can be bad, violent content, obviously, on video games, and there are issues related to attention.
So, and to addiction.
And no question about addiction. I mean, I personally believe that if you look at many of our adult colleagues who cannot tear themselves away from their Crackberry or their phone and literally don't pay as much attention to their children, that's one of the other interesting issues here is the role modeling of parents. So if you as a parent are constantly glued to your screen, whether it's your laptop or your iPad or your Crackberry, you are not setting a good example for your kid, and they will learn from that. And there's an addictive nature to it. Just watch people.
You have more people who smoke cigarettes who are essentially addicted to television, and then they become addicted to tobacco?
Or? I don't know about the cigarette piece, but I will tell you this.
Because you mentioned Crackberry. I don't know about crack.
Oh, I have a Blackberry, so I have to refer it that way. And I have been accused by my children of paying too much attention to it. But the point I'm saying
is data that shows that people get an endorphin high when
they
get, you know.
It's addictive. There are definitely addictive qualities, which is all about why balance and moderation and good choices are so key here. And that's true for parents. That's true for kids. That's true for educators. That's the bottom line, I think, of the whole discussion.
And we'll bring more of our calls in. And let's go to Chris in Berkeley. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My wife and I are new parents of a four-month-old girl, and we've actually been having this conversation. So I love that you guys are talking about this topic today. Our child does not sit in front of the TV, and she won't watch TV until she's older than two. And if we're sitting and watching TV, we have her positioned if she's awake so that she can't look at the screen, with one notable exception, and that is her father is a sports fanatic and will be watching the Cardinals in the World Series tonight, and she'll be wearing her Cardinals jersey tonight. And I will let her turn and look at the screen when I'm sitting there watching sports. And I'm wondering if any of this research has looked at content and whether there's any difference in, say, the fast-paced cartoons that you've been talking about, something like looking at a baseball game every now and then with a young child.
Well, baseball is a lot slower than the kind of cartoons we're talking about here. Jim Steyer, what do we know about
baseball
back
games,
to content again.
Baseball games are fine. I've done that. I have four children. I just say to our caller, all of my children have grown up watching Giant games, and they're just fine. But the point about content, which you made earlier, Michael, is really important. And think about it. Baseball is, of course, played at its leisurely, slow pace. But there are issues about brain development with the really fast-cutting shows, which is what you're referring to earlier. That also plays out now on a video on digital platforms where games are oftentimes very quick moving, and that can have an impact on brain development. But overall, and I do think this is what Jessica was saying earlier in terms of sort of a mom's perspective on this, is you got to be reasonable. Letting your kid watch the Cardinals hopefully beat the Rangers tonight, that's okay. That's not going to hurt your kid. It's all about common sense. But
I also, you know,
Jessica Gottlieb, yeah.
Harvard study that I'm looking at that is by Marie Evans Schmidt, PhD, and that says that there is absolutely no deleterious effect from these kids having watched TV between ages 0 and 3. And I would beg to differ with you that Christakis is an expert that should be renowned and revered. He's a marketer in Seattle. And I understand, I think he's a MPH. But his study has just been called into question in a big, major way. And let's see, they violated the Public Records Act. There's two sets of raw data for his study. So I have to fundamentally disagree with you over and over and over again. And I understand anything rational. I don't want my kids playing with nesting cups for 12 hours a day any more than I want them watching TV for 5 hours a day. Too much of anything is too much of anything. Talk to your kids, sing to your kids. If the sound comes from the TV, if the singing comes from the TV, that's okay. If it comes from the radio, that's okay. If it comes from you, of course that's better. But this concept that TV and screens are going to harm our kids is just ludicrous. Probably most of you are sitting in front of screens right now and using them as part of your work. And it's just the same as saying, don't give your kid a typewriter, because all they're going to do is type all day.
Well, my question to you, Jessica Gottlieb, is, and I know you've been blogging with a lot of other mothers, is there any kind of consensus, or is there any notion in your mind of what is the proper amount of time? Or has it just become qualitative rather than quantitative?
I really think that depends on your family. My family, frankly, my kids probably have less screen time than most. They're just busy. And I don't know, but I know that parents know when it's too much. I know that when my kid has the flu, that's an eight-hour day of laying around with probably the TV on. And I know that during a normal school week, the only screens that are on are the computer to do homework.
Let me actually go to some comments on our website. Here's a listener who says, we limit my four-year-old daughter to about 30 to 60 minutes of TV per day. Always PBS morning shows. You'll be glad to hear, Leslie Ruttenberg. We don't turn on the TV after school at all until she is asleep, although it's fairly easy to control her TV viewing. She's always getting screen time on computers at her preschool and at home. And another listener writes on the web, much too much television viewing at home due to being lazy on the adult's part, but at least always have closed caption on, which has resulted in our son being a good reader who very often catches mistakes in spelling and non-matches, whether spoken or written version of broadcast. Tim writes, it's fine to point out the hazards of kids spending too much time in front of the screen, but it's crucially important to understand the problem in the context of broader social problems of the deterioration of family and neighborhood vitality. TV and computer screens are automated babysitters resorted to when parents are required to work more and neighborhoods are less safe for kids to play outside on their own. There is that sense, and I wonder, Jessica Gottlieb, again, about your take on it, that the TV is simply too often relied upon as a babysitter. Now, I know earlier you said that parents need certainly some kind of way to take away from their responsibilities and all the albatross that's hanging over their necks in terms of those responsibilities, and TV can provide some relief, but it does tend to be an easy fallback for many parents as a babysitter, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Listen, I can tell you that without Blue's Clues, my family never would have sat down to dinner. I knew that I could get 20 minutes out of that video and that for 20 minutes I could throw together a dinner. And was it easy? Absolutely. And I don't think that it's criminal. Well, you know, it doesn't make you a bad parent to do something that's easy.
Let me go to more of your calls here, and we'll go to caller in Walnut Creek. Jolene, join us. Hi, you're on.
Hi, I'm a parent of a 23-month-old, and since she was 6 months, maybe two or three times a week, I'd let her watch a video called Baby Signing Time, and she learned so much from this video. Even though she was under two, she can do, like, more than 20 signs now, and she loves it. And on the other hand, for the blogger who said that you can't take a shower without giving them TV, I totally disagree with that, because the way that I'm able to take a shower is that I let my daughter do a puzzle on the floor, and she loves it, and I've never used the TV to take a shower. So I totally disagree with that idea.
Well, we thank you for your call, and I'm looking at some more comments on the web. Get your response to this one, Leslie Rotenberg, the solicitor who writes, though I agree that much commercial television is bad for young children, I wonder if certain educational programs have a different effect on some toddlers. The finding that toddlers under two don't get it does not match up with my experience with my 21-month-old. He'd been watching Sesame Street since he was about 15 months old, and he's highly engaged with it. I hadn't earnestly started teaching him to count yet, but he surprised me one day by counting to 10. I have Count Von Count to thank for that. When he's playing with me on his own, I can see how his imagination has been kindled by the show as he pretends to be Super Grover or tells himself stories about Elmo. He has an excellent attention span, and recently I've allowed him to watch Bambi, which he is also very engaged with and likes to talk about and is also part of his pretend play now. The only problem with Bambi is the mother dies, and a lot of kids get very frightened by that at a certain age. But again, you were speaking before, Leslie Rotenberg, about not having really kids that young in mind, but there's an effect there.
There is. I think the caller is evidence of the fact that every child is different. Right. And parents are in the best position to know what their child is capable of doing, what they understand, and then how to moderate their particular media diet. And you obviously heard from somebody whose child is comprehending what's going on in Sesame Street. And if they are comprehending and demonstrating comprehension, then they're going to benefit from it. I think the under two thing is a general rule, and we certainly abide by it, but I think that there are exceptions, and you just heard from somebody who's an exception, and I think probably a better rule for parents is to really watch their particular child and see what they're capable of understanding, and to use that as your guide, and to interact with your child when, before, after, during their media use, and ask them questions and engage with them so that you understand whether they're benefiting from it or not. And, you know, I know as a parent of two kids that I had two children
had completely different reactions to media, and I really used that as my guide. And I certainly wasn't a perfect parent either, but I had one child who could moderate herself and would leave the TV and go and sit down and play with blocks or something else. And I had another one who would just watch it endless amounts of time until I had to get up and turn it off, and became more addictive. You know, it was more addictive for that child. So I really think that every child is different, and that parents are in the best position to be able to understand what their child can respond to and what they can benefit from.
And let me go back, Jessica Gottlieb, to you with a listener named Matt who says, the mommy blogger guest suggested that pediatricians should assume parents have common sense and basically not burden them with a lot of do's and don'ts. As any teacher, of which a number of mine are close friends, can tell you, many or most parents do not have common sense. Parents such as your guest seem to advocate that parenting is an instinctual trait, but as the old adage says, it takes a village to raise a child. Parenting is a learned skill, and society and community plays a vital role of helping parents to successfully raise their children. If science, as well as that suggested common sense, says that media exposure should be limited for children, then parents should be paying close attention. Lastly, Sesame Street is being discussed as I write this. As a child who grew up with Sesame Street, I advocate strongly for its educational value, at least in the 80s when I grew up. Oh, what about that notion, Jessica Gottlieb, that you know, there are parents who don't have the common sense that perhaps you would like to ascribe to them?
I think here's the problem, is that when I first was presented with this, it was, you know, the no screen time. I think it was in between my kids. So I think that when my second kid came around, that the pediatrician was like, and we're saying no screen time for any kids.
How old are your kids? Because
So they're 13 and 10.
Yeah, because the original pediatric report said that back in 1999, but they've modified it because people said, what planet do you live on? You know?
Right. Yeah, they do. So when my second one came around, what happens is that when the AAP has these recommendations and they're so rigid that you walk in as a parent to the pediatrician's office and everything's dishonest from that moment forward, because you're like, oh no, my kids never watch TV. Meanwhile, you know that mom, you know, had it on for, you know, whatever time. And so I think, you know, recommendations are nice, but when things are super stringent and assume that parents don't have the common sense, and that I think it makes it really tough on parents, and the parent is really the client in those first few years, that the baby isn't talking to the pediatrician. And to start off with, like, these huge levels of dishonesty, I think is really tough and makes it hard for the pediatrician to take care of the family.
James Sire, you do make a distinction, don't you, between commercial television and public television?
Definitely do. And by the way, you heard Leslie Rotenberg earlier, and she was so thoughtful about what she said, and every child is different. I do, because I think commercial television, just like, is different from public television in the same way that public radio that we're on today is different.
Is it okay to leave your public radio on all day with your children there?
Well, particularly if you're the host, Michael. I mean,
I've
if you're the host,
that asks
you could do 24/7, no problem. But I would tell you that, yes, and it's why we need to continue to fund public media, because the quality of the discussion, whether it's on radio or television, is key. And look, we wouldn't have Sesame Street or some of the other great stuff that's now filtered over to, say, Nick Jr. and Disney Channel Jr. That wouldn't have happened if you hadn't had what PBS Kids. So what Leslie does and what she and her colleagues at PBS do is absolutely brilliant. At the end of the day, though, this discussion is a good thing, because parents, this is part of parenting today. Whether we like it or not, media and technology are everywhere in our kids' lives. Using them widely, taking advantage of the educational opportunities that they can present is terrific. Setting healthy limits, being engaged, having discussions like we're having today about it. All of this ultimately leads to happier, smarter, better kids. And what's more important than that?
And we go next to Kelly in Davis. Hi, Kelly.
Hi there. I just wanted to pose a question that I don't know that's been covered real well yet. And I have kids of different ages, and my 1.5-year-old loves to be with my 4-year-old every second of the day. And I'm not going to, when she gets to watch her half hour of TV a day, I'm not going to pull him away from her and stick him in another room because he's under two. So I was wondering if your guest could address that.
You know, I would just tell you this is a thing we see at Common Sense. That's a great question. We see this all the time at Common Sense. Look, I've got four kids, and they range from 7 to 18, so you can just imagine the dilemmas there. But I think what you really have to do is teach the older kids to be responsible for the younger kids, for their younger sister or brother. And you're absolutely right that your siblings love to bond together, most of the time at least, and mm-hmm. that you're not going to push them aside. But I think one of the things is it means that for the older kids sometimes that you, first of all, you have to choose age-appropriate media. So you've got to make good conscious choices. You've got to use resources like Common Sense and others that help you make good choices and your friends' recommendations. But I think that you really do have to talk to older kids. The same issue you have when your kids go over to somebody else's house and they watch a movie or play a video game you don't want them to play. Sometimes you have to talk to that kid's parents and say, you know, those just cut against our standards. So it's communication. And with older kids, I think in my experience, a lot of times older kids like being a good older brother or sister. But that sibling issue is going to be there for a long time for
you
all.
You also have many parents who are monitoring and careful about what their kids watch, but when they have a babysitter, they can't necessarily control what the babysitter's watching, and the kid is there and exposed to it. I think that really needs to be brought into the equation, too. Here's Michael who writes, I have a toddler. He watches a lot of YouTube videos, which are nursery rhyme songs. I find that this is a great tool for him to learn about music and learn the words of songs, listening to them over and over. In addition, he watches foreign language cartoons, for example, Dora the Explorer in French and other related media. It's become apparent that he is definitely learning words in French because of watching these videos. But I guess I would also like to add that we are engaged in the watching of these videos while we are there with him. We don't just sit down in front of the TV or iPad and let him do things alone. So I guess I want to say that in my experience, watching certain types of media has been a great educational experience, even for a child under two. Another listener writes, my daughter learned to read from watching TV before she was two. When we printed out words from TV like powder, Chevy 2, I know, Apple, and many more, she would read them. We noticed she only watched the commercials. She's now a PhD and teaches at San Francisco State. We've been talking, about TV mostly, but Judy Campbell just informed me that a lot of people are asking about radio and audio and how that affects things. And James Steyer was saying that, radio is okay if you listen to public radio, but what about commercial radio? Do we know anything about the effects?
You know, we know some, and I think we know that, but the same bottom line applies, I think, across platforms, whether it's television, radio, and even the digital ones, which is moderation and balance are key. Every kid is different. Leslie Rotenberg said it really thoughtfully.
But don't listen to radio all day with your kid, basically.
Well, and quite frankly, some of the shock jock stuff is totally inappropriate. You know, you're driving the carpool, and you have kids. So you have to make wise choices. In all this area, it's part of parenting. You got to make choices.
The mommy. And
Leslie Gottlieb.
Say that I'm not old enough to listen to a lot of the morning drive time TV.
Well, my listeners will be glad to know that we are now leading all that competition in this market and say that with some pride. And unfortunately, we're out of time, but this has been certainly a lively and I think a very enlightening hour. I want to extend thanks to all who participated. We spoke earlier with Dr. Ari Brown, pediatrician and lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics Policy on Television and Kids Under 2 Years Old. Thank you, Jessica Gottlieb, parent blogger from Los Angeles. Thank you, Leslie Rotenberg, Senior Vice President at Children's Media with PBS. And thank you, James Steyer, CEO and founder of Common Sense Media. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. And we want to also thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Amy Machado, and our interns, Adam Susanik, Dominic Tan, Don Clyde, Molly Williams, Jameson Katsoufas, and Preeti Shaker. Our engineer is Howard Gelman. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.